Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? What, who's there? What's going on?
It's time to enter the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's time for the highly sought-after, fabulous final hour of the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
Welcome back for the highly sought after fabulous final hour of the Tom Abraham Show. The unknown texter, you guys know him as the unknown texter, has gotten loose again. Guy comes in every few months and just starts ripping on me and thinks I suck and everything else, which is good. You know, that's fine. I mean, you can't have, you know, everybody can't be of the same opinion. But he's always good. He's always fun. He always makes me laugh. But I think he texted me by mistake today. I think. Well, he kind of sexted me is what he did, I believe. It was pretty funny. I couldn't even read it on the air. Usually I can always read the unknown texter's texts on the air, but I couldn't read it today because it was... I think he thought I was a chick or something, and he was saying vile, rude things about body parts and things like that. I read it to T-Mac off the air. Pretty funny, though, T-Mac. I don't think I've ever gotten that text before. I've gotten a lot of texts, you know, more positive than negative, but I haven't gotten that one before.
Look,
just saying.
I'm just saying that, yeah, you couldn't read it on the air, and you did read it to me. I think the unknown texter getting a little loose in the text box was a little bit of an understatement.
It was funny though, wasn't it?
Oh, it was great.
It was a definite smile. All right. phone lines are open, by the way. If you want to get in, if you got an idea where you want to contribute, you can get in. If line is toll free, 866-485-WUMP. That's 866-485-9867. Digital Doghouse is there. That's the Twitter feed at Tom Abraham Show. Throw us a follow there. We have the Facebook fan page as well. I post a lot of stuff over there. You can throw us a like at Facebook.com/Tom Abraham Show. Text window 7329 TA show. You could say anything you want there. I mean, you know, let's just be honest. I mean, you could there, you could hide behind, you know, whatever it is that you want to say, and you could jump in there and say it. And I read a decent amount of them on the air. And some of you even make money when I read your text on the air. So you can check that out as well. Doghouse inbox is open, Tom@TomAbraham.com. You can follow the ump on Twitter at umsports. Check out our website, umsports.com, where right now you can snag yourself a Tennessee Valley golf card, the summer golf card, and go check it out there and get that. All I know is this, $300 worth of golf for $119. That will make your summer. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bankston Motorhomes, where Bankston is still registering people to win any new RV from their inventory of over 500 new travel trailers, fifth wheels, and motorhomes. My wife and I are now thinking fifth wheel. We've been thinking motorhome, but we're now starting to think fifth wheel because she doesn't want to be limited in the vehicle as to what you can do. You know, when you get to a spot, you want to be able to drop it and then have a vehicle. So, I feel it. I understand what she's saying. Anyway, maybe I'll try and win one. I don't know. I'm probably not eligible, but you can try and win one. The winner will be announced in November. All you got to do is go to the website, bankstonmotorhomes.com, and click to enter the win button. And then guess the winning Alabama driver's license number. I'm going to say it's probably not mine. Of course, I have a Tennessee driver's license. But anyway, just guess the Alabama driver's license number. Anybody, just put in a number. Look at your license. Assume it's not yours, but at least then you know how many numbers to put in there. And just put a number in there. The winning driver's license number is locked away safely in a vault until November. And if no one guesses the correct number, then the person with the closest guess will win a $1,000 gas card. Bankston has the largest selection of used RVs in the southeastern United States. They got almost 200 used RVs in stock now. Surely they've got one to fit your budget. Learn more at BankstonMotorhomes.com. All right, lines are open if you want to get in. Last night, the NBA season came to a crashing close. A game that looked like it was going to be competitive until midway through the second quarter when Golden State just blew up on a 28-4 run. Golden State's bench outscored Cleveland's bench 35-7 in a 9-point game. 35-7. Game was physical. LeBron played very well. But in the end, just too much Kevin Durant. I know he was the MVP. I know they're saying this is his team. I know everybody's trying to spin it. But I'm telling you, this has got to be a bit hollow. It's just got to, he joined the best team in basketball. One that probably should have won its third straight championship there. Two without him. I think he's kind of weak. LeBron always says that the championship he won with Cleveland is the most meaningful one. Because that's the one he owns. I just think it's kind of weak. Just that's where I'm at on that. Now, according to Adam Silver, he's trying to spin this to a positive way. He said that regardless of the fact that you've got two huge favorites next season, I mean, they're 2 to 3 favorites. That's more than even money favorites. They're 2 to 3 favorites, Golden State, to win again. Cleveland is 3 to 1. And then the next closest are 12 to 1. San Antonio and Boston. Then there's Toronto at like, you know, 30-something to 1. There's 5 teams that are under 50 to 1. In the NFL, there's 4 teams that are over 50 to 1. It's ridiculous. Adam Silver says, rather than focusing on the top of the league, we should be focusing on the rest of the league. There is no rest of the league, Adam. He said, rather than talking about how to break up or knock down a championship-caliber team, my focus should be on how we do a better job developing more great players in this league. Well, listen, Adam, I'm just saying there are only so many Kevin Durant and LeBron James types. Like, there's one of each of those. There's a Steph Curry. You know, I mean, you don't really got a lot of these guys. What do you mean develop more? I mean, come on. Silver pointed out that the Warriors had succeeded through savvy drafting and player development before signing Kevin Durant, who became the NBA Finals MVP. Yeah. But then they added that guy to a championship team already. He said they chose Draymond Green with the 35th pick, Klay Thompson at number 11, and Steph Curry 7th. And then signed Curry to an extension early in his career, allowing them to keep the flexibility to keep the nucleus together with key role players. And yes, an incredible free agent was added to that squad. They added their best player. They didn't add a part. They added their best player. What it should be doing is create more great teams in this league. Oh, okay. Okay, what, are you a player? You're just going to go out there and just become LeBron James. My answer is let's create more great teams rather than completely focus on one incredible team and whether that's seemingly unfair to the other team. I think it's the nature of competition. Ultimately, it's all about raising the bar for all the teams in this league and celebrating excellence. You know what I say to that? Bull crap. I say the other bull to it, but I don't want to cuss. Bull crap. That's bull crap. Oklahoma City was developing a great team. They had Kevin Durant and they had Russell Westbrook. And they had James Harden. I mean, think about OKC with James Harden and Westbrook and Durant. But James Harden didn't want to stay there. He had to go to Houston. And Durant didn't want to stay there. He had to go to Golden State. And Russell Westbrook's left there to have triple doubles every night because he's got nobody else. I don't think it's healthy. He said, are stars born or are they made? The issue here, This wasn't a function of a bunch of star players coming together and saying, let's choose to play for, go play for this team. You had one incredible free agent join a group of other stars who weren't stars until they came together and came together under Steve Kerr and demonstrated excellence. The NBA and NBA Players Association enacted changes to the CBA meant to prevent stars from aligning that would take effect next year. Teams can negotiate with their homegrown players sooner, and they can offer more money under the salary cap, says the story. Silver says, of course, over time, we'll continue to look at the CBA, and if there are additional changes we need to make to promote competitive balance, we will. Then he went on to the age limit rule. He says that he thinks a greater number of international players can raise the level of play, and he wants to change the NBA's age limit rule, primarily to develop more skilled, prepared players entering the league. Draymond, 4 years in college. Stephen Clay, 3 years in college. Well, they went to small schools. So what does that say? The message is, it doesn't mean that we should absolutely raise the minimum age. It just means that what we should is focus on is there's something about the way they were developed that turned them into such great players. My answer is, let's create more great teams. What a dumbass. Kevin Durant, 1 year in college. LeBron James, no years in college. Draymond Green. Stop it. Look, you got a problem there. You say what you want, man. You got a problem there. So, speaking of problems, when I was talking about Mount Rushmore of hockey yesterday, I said I made a reference to the Mount Rushmore of college football. And Rick in North Fort Myers said the Mount Rushmore of college football is Newt Rockne, Bear Bryant, Bobby Bowden, Joe Paterno. Period. End of story. And I'm like, whoa, Yoda. Step back away from that for just a moment here. Are you telling me we're not going to put Nick Saban on the Mount Rushmore of college coaches? He's like, well, you got your guy with Bear Bryant. Well, excuse me. Excuse me. You got one guy that's got six national championships. The other guy's got five national championships. Alabama's only allowed to have one guy on the Mount Rushmore? Joe Paterno has two national championships and three Big Ten titles. And then the disgrace, regardless of the fact that Al Pacino will play him in the movie. I got to tell you right now, I mean, yeah, there's longevity there. But I'm taking Nick Saban over Joe Paterno right now. Bobby Bowden. I think I'm good with Bobby Bowden there. T-Mac, where are you going, man? I mean, what do you get? You got a Bear Bryant. Now, we're not saying Eddie Robinson because we're talking about, you know, Division 1A here. We're not going John Gagliardi. We're not going Bobby. We're not going Eddie Robinson. These are great, great men and great, great coaches. But you got to have Bear.
Yeah.
What about Newt Rockne? Don't you? I mean, do you? You pretty much got to have Newt Rockne, unless you want to do a before 1950 and after 1950 thing.
If we're going to keep all those guys that you said up there, like kind of like you did with hockey, and you could maybe tweak Mario Lemieux, and in this situation, we may be able to tweak Paterno. I think you should be able to tweak Paterno, and you're trying to just sub one guy in there.
But yeah. You can only have four. It's Mount Rushmore.
Right. If you're trying to sub one guy in Paterno's case, I would personally pick Saban, but I mean, yeah, you got to have Rockne, you got to have Bear, but I mean, there's some other incredible coaches to consider, you know what I mean?
Who do you take off?
Exactly, you really can't. Rockne, you know, he back in 1919 or something like that, way back in the day doing his thing, but I mean, you still have Bo Schembechler, who was fantastic, you know, I mean, well, Woody Hayes had that incident where, you know, punched someone, but he was a great coach. You know, there's a bunch of great coaches in there.
Woody Hayes, by the way, over Bo Schembechler.
Yeah.
Newt Rockne won five national championships.
In a short amount of time, too.
Yeah. He only won one bowl game. Of course, they didn't really, you know, they invented bowl games back then. But dude won 5 national championships. You know, it's hard not to. When he died, he was 43 years old. You know, who knows where that thing was going? He invented Notre Dame football.
And I pulled it up. I knew it was a short amount of time. He was only the head coach at Notre Dame from 1918 to 1930. That's, you know,
12 years.
12 years. And he won.
What was his record? I'm looking for his record.
Overall record was 105, 12, and 5.
105, 12, and 5. I mean, come on.
But, I mean, they weren't playing nearly as many games, you know what I mean? So, I mean,
it just doesn't matter. I mean,
inflated to
percentage,
now.
105 and 12. I mean, you know, come on.
So that's what I'm saying. I'm kind of backing up that situation. I know it's only 105 wins, but, you know, he probably would have won more than that had they played as many games now. So,
did he invent the forward pass? I think Newt Rockne was the one that picked up the ball and started throwing the ball forward. I know he invented the T formation and the shift. But, I mean, they called it the Notre Dame box. They had a quarterback, a halfback, a tailback, and a fullback. And the tailback actually was like a single wing tailback lined up behind the center. The quarterback lined up behind the guard. The halfback was in the slot between the tackle and the tight end with the fullback behind him. And that was the Notre Dame box. Look, it was a different era. It's obviously a totally different era. Someday somebody, you know, people are going to say that about Bear Bryant. But even, you know, you could say, even if you were to put Newt Rockne aside, I'm not sure that Paterno would be on there. I mean, that's a tough list to make. When you're talking about Mount Rushmore's, you got room for 4 dudes. That's it. You get no more than that. That makes it a tough list.
Yeah, I think it's kind of easy for me to take Paterno off there because of the situation he was in. But even if he didn't have that situation, you can only put 4 guys up there. I mean, I know longevity means a lot, and he was there forever and won however many games. But like you said, that's a tough thing to crack. And I'd look at more than just wins. I'd look at, you know, when you look at championships, how many did you win in a certain amount of time? You know, how effective were you? Rockne won 5 in 12 years. Saban's won 5 in however many years he's been coaching. I mean, LSU and then Bama.
Garrett makes a good point. He says, look, Penn State only joined the Big Ten in 93.
Yeah.
And he did have 5 undefeated seasons, and he had only 5 losing seasons. I don't think Nick Saban's had 5 losing seasons. I mean, put cream on that. How many seasons has Nick Saban had where he had a losing record? He did not have one at, well, he hasn't had one at Alabama, and he did not have one at LSU, I don't believe. And I guess if you go back to Michigan State, I'm not sure if he did there or at Toledo. Did he have a losing record at Toledo maybe 1 year? Has Nick Saban had 1 or 2 losing seasons ever?
I don't know. We got the crack research department on it right now.
Yeah, get research on it.
I don't think he has, though. Cream's looking it up. And
open his mic up over there. Cream, what do you think? What are you finding, Cream? Are you finding any losing seasons for Saban?
He doesn't have a losing season at all. The closest he had was an even season when he was a coach at Michigan State in 1996 when he went 6-6.
Now, the haters would say, Cream, that he had a losing season in 07 because they had to forfeit a bunch of games. His official record, I think, in 07 is something like 2-7 with some vacated games or something like that. Some goofy thing about that 07 season. They ended up having to vacate some wins or something.
Yeah, for the 07 season, it says 7-6, but then it says record adjusted to 2-6 by the NCAA.
There you go. 7-6. So they vacated 5 victories. They didn't make them losses, but they vacated 5 victories when they played with an ineligible player that they didn't know. But but that doesn't count.
No, they're vacated. They weren't losses. They were vacated. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah. That's the closest thing that dude has. So, you know, so when you got no losing seasons, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, just Bob Stoops didn't have one either. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. All right, let's get a break in. When we come back, we'll rewind it. It's the Tom Abraham Show, 730-1039.
The Tom Abraham Show is back. Listen at your own risk.
Rewind is brought to you by Woody Anderson Ford, because all our guests appear on a Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline. And now is the time to get in there and check out the remaining 2017 F-150s, because the 2018s are on the way. Might want to check out the Ford Fusion, because, you know, they just win the race every single weekend. I mean, Ford is hot right now, man. It's tremendous. Anyway, get on down to Woody Anderson Ford. Check out Henry's Mustang Cafe. You can go there just at breakfast or lunch. I mean, you don't have to be in there for service or anything else. It's going to be hard to avoid seeing the beautiful rigs that are out there out front, the beautiful Fords in this line of 2017 and 2018s that are starting to show up. But if you need service, it doesn't even matter whether you're driving a Ford or not. If you need service, any kind of vehicle, you can get it done right there. Check out the new service lanes at Woody Anderson Ford at Jordan and Sparkman. And if you're in Madison, there's Woody Anderson Ford at Madison as well. And you'll find that right there on Hughes, south of 72. All right, on the show today, Bo Estes was in. Kevin Rogers joined us. Alan Carpenter talked draft. Also, Greg Wyshynski was in from the Puck Daddy. And Jordan Bianchi wrapped up NASCAR for us. We put it all in the blender. This is the Woody Anderson Ford Rapid Rewind. I'm not sure that he's the best player anymore either. I mean, with Durant and the evenness of his play, you know, I know he had great numbers and so on, but I think it's part of it's because they don't have the options maybe. You know, it's interesting. Charles in Decatur wrote on our text window, why would someone refer to these Cavs or last year's Cavs as a super team just because they have three max players? Kevin Love hasn't come close to playing as a max player in Cleveland. They just haven't been able to replace him. As soon as they can, they will. You can make the case that, I mean, LeBron has to have a triple-double because they're really, as great as Kyrie Irving has been at times, there's really, I mean, it's really shows up the lack of depth. They were outscored from the bench 35-7 last night. 35-7. Much less the options that are in the starting five, and you really see it. You know, I mean, it maybe be a different thing if there was more balance. LeBron's numbers wouldn't be as great, and they maybe are, you know, a two- or three-time champion in Cleveland.
Yeah, I think LeBron would gladly trade in some of those numbers for another ring in this run. The ring that they should have probably gotten was that first time against the Warriors when Kyrie and Kevin Love were hurt. But I think there's a good point to be made that maybe this isn't the super team that the Miami Heat were at peak heat when Dwayne Wade's in his prime, when Chris Bosh is in his prime. Kevin Love last night showed up to the tune of just 6 points, 0 of 3 from three-point range. He did have 10 rebounds, which is nice enough. The person who did show up, and a bit of a surprise, J.R. Smith, 7 of 8 from three-point range. But you just need, you know, a superstar needs to be more reliable than that. I know that the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to feel like they have to make a move to catch Golden State. They're going to have to do something. I just, Tom, for the life of me, I've been looking around today, this morning, I don't know what the move is. I don't know that there's one move that closes the gap sufficiently enough. So, Cleveland is as close as anybody is in the league, and I don't know that there's a play they can make to catch the Golden State Warriors.
Well, to that end, Golden State is a better than 50-50 or better than, 1-1. I don't know why I'm having a hard time saying this. Golden State's 2-3. To win the championship next year, according to Vegas, 2-3. So they're better than an odds-on favorite. That's what I was trying to say. To win, Cleveland is 3-1, and then it's the Celtics and Spurs at 12-1. I mean, that's how top heavy this. It's never been this top heavy to where it's 2-3, and then 3-1, and then 12-1. I mean, you know, so it's okay. All right, let's wait 10 months, and we'll get this going again.
Well, the team that's interesting to me in all of this is the Boston Celtics, because the Boston Celtics are going to have the number one pick. They also could afford to take on a free agent like a Gordon Hayward, perhaps. So they could get better in a hurry, and they were already really good. Again, you're talking about them getting better versus them closing the gap on Golden State and potentially surpassing them. I think those are two very different questions. But I think that the Boston Celtics are a team to keep your eye on. LeBron and company, they've spent so much money. They're sort of stuck where they are. They have Kevin Love under contract for a couple more years. Would somebody want to take that contract on? Look, there are nights when Kevin Love is a really, really good player in this league, and he's an all-star level player. But I think LeBron needs more help. And that's talking about a guy who was 19 of 30 from the field last night, and he averaged a triple-double in the finals, and he still needs more. That tells you where the Golden State Warriors are, and that tells you where the Cleveland Cavaliers are.
Yeah, I'm just looking. It's funny you say that as I look at the NFL futures versus the NBA futures. Right now, Golden State's 2-3. I mean, what value is there? 2-3 to win the championship for 2018. Cleveland is 3-1. And then not only does it jump to Boston and San Antonio at 12-1, which is a sucker bet anyway, but they go to 12-1. Houston is 20-1. The Clippers are 33-1. And then the Raptors and everybody else, 50-1 or higher. There are only six teams in the entire NBA that are less than 50-1. And I'm looking at the NFL odds right now, and only, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, only the Browns, Jets, Rams, and 49ers are more than 50-1. I mean, that's the number. You got one league where 28 teams are considered, you know, less than 50. 51 is a big shot. 50-1 or less. In the NBA, there's only six teams that are 50-1 or less. I mean, and really, there's only two that are less than 12-1. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, and also, you look at the NFL, and understandably, the Browns or the 49ers or the Jets or some of these bad teams or Jacksonville are not going to go to the playoffs. They're not going to win the Super Bowl. But we've seen in the past, what if one of them somehow goes 9-7 or 10-6 and they get in as a wild card where they have a shot? They still have a chance to win four games. It's very difficult. You're a 41-41 team in the NBA. You got to win 16 games to win the championship. That's not happening. It's just not. And the NBA is never going to do this. But you know what? If they had a best of one in the championship or best of one in the playoffs, that would make it interesting, like the NFL, because then you could say Golden State could be playing Portland or Utah. Maybe they lose one game and they're knocked out. And that's why we love March Madness. That's why we love the best of one format. The best of seven does not yield upsets. That's why the whole system is broken in a sense when you have two power teams.
Well, or at least go to back to a best of five in the first round or the first two rounds, because there's just no way that any 5, 6, 7, or 8 seed anymore, or let's say 6, 7, or 8 seed, can win four games against the top of the deal. But if you had where it was, go back to the best of five or even a best of three in the first round, all of a sudden there's an upset and you're on the ropes. You know what I mean? That kind of a thing. They got to do something, because best of seven all the way through, you get no drama at all. Zero drama.
No, well, there's no drama, especially when you have Steph Curry's an MVP, Durant's an MVP, Klay Thompson's an all-star, Draymond Green's an all-star. When you have all these guys, you know, when you go back to Dallas, for instance, when they played Golden State years ago and Golden State knocked them out, the Baron Davis, Steven Jackson teams, they were talented and Dallas was really good, but they were a deceiving 65 or 67 win team. Golden State wins 70 games in their sleep. You know that? I mean, it's just it's not as narrow as it used to be, that the gap is so wide now from the 1-8 where it used to be. You know what? If you were an 8, you had a shot. You weren't that far off from the 1. But now you got no chance. You really do. And, you know, it's even worse in the East with Cleveland, because you say no one's beaten Cleveland four times, much less maybe two times in a series.
Now, if we just look at the numbers, of course, you know, as a freshman, he's pitching midweek against, you know, Middle Tennessee and different guys like that, teams outside of the SEC. And then as he gets further along in his career, we get that he's getting the weekend starts and so on and so forth. But this year, the 3.40 ERA was his highest ERA in his 3 years at Vandy. The 5-6 record, he was 8-4 last year. Same number of starts, 16 starts, same number of complete games with one complete game. Now, his strikeouts were up. He is a strikeout an inning kind of guy, a little bit better than a strikeout an inning kind of guy. But what would be the explanation if a fan's just looking at the numbers in the press release and says, wait a minute, he was 3.09 last year and now he's 3.40 this year. His record went from 8-4 to 5-6, and he's an All-American this year.
It was basically coming down to the fact that he got started slowly this year by his own admission. Just didn't quite have it going right at the beginning of the season, but certainly came on towards the end enough that Baseball America had him ranked about fifth or sixth at the start of the season in January, and he was number two on the entire draft board for them, and number one for the Braves, of course, at the end of the season. So it was a battle of momentum and getting started and getting himself on track, and it certainly came on towards the end of the year.
He was all freshman his freshman year. He was second team all SEC last year, and he was a preseason All-American and a first team all SEC this year and a second team All-American this year. So he's certainly one of the top players in college baseball. There's no question about it. And how cool is it? I don't know if you've ever had a chance to talk to him. We're trying to track him down, but how neat is it in this case for him to be able to play for his boyhood team, the team that he pulled for his whole life, to be able to put that Braves gear on? It's got to be really something for him.
I have been watching the draft course since it started last night, and as well as been watching the draft reactions, where you see all these kids getting their name announced, and it's obviously a wonderful thing and a great honor for them. But you see a lot of the reactions being like, yay, I got drafted, that kind of thing, and like, yeah, you got me, and that kind of thing. The reaction from his family, his friends, his teammates, to everybody sitting in the room, if you haven't found or seen the video of that, it's like euphoric. That reaction in the room was a total celebration. It looked like everybody wanted to pull for the Braves to call his name, and that happened. And I'm really excited for the kid as well as for the Braves.
Yeah. Describe what kind of pitcher he is. Pitcher, thrower, is this a guy, three, four different pitches type guy, or is this a high heat guy? Give us a little bit of an idea, scouting report on him.
Well, that's part of the deal that makes him very close to major league ready. He could end up starting possibly as high as double A next year. He is sitting about mid-90s with his fastball. He has a good down action on his curveball, nice slider as well. He needs a little bit more command or control to finish himself off, and might be able to get a little instruction from a guy named Chris Medlin on his changeup. I don't know, but we'll see how that goes. But he is definitely a guy who's got an excellent mix and all the pitches that you would need to be a reliable major league starter. He has been a starter last couple of years in his Vanderbilt experience. He was pitching right there in terms of stats with Jordan Sheffield, now a Yankees prospect, last year. And yeah, I just, I'm excited for the pick, because the Braves certainly had him number one on their board, right with the guys like Mackenzie Gore, Hunter Green, Brendan McKay, that were all taken in the top five. And it's a definitely a coup to get him at the fifth spot in the draft.
Yeah, and what if the referee doesn't blow the whistle? I mean, look, Brett Hall thinks that's a good goal. You know what I mean? I'm just saying. Look, that now, see, there's a random reference. Okay, only a Western New Yorker would maybe get that reference. But is that something that and I'm not saying it would make the difference in that game, or it might have made a difference in that game. I mean, that's a huge momentum deal, and we know how the Preds and the fans and everything else would have been after that. Who knows? Maybe they pot another one or two. But is that something that the NHL can look at? In the NFL, they went to that a couple of years ago, where if they had a clear recovery of a fumble, even after an intermittent whistle, they would go ahead and award possession to the team that recovered it. Can they say that, look, if nothing stopped the play and there's basically what amounts to an inadvertent whistle, that they'll count a goal like that in the future?
No, I don't think that there's any reason to think that they're going to alter the rules at all. I think we could all agree that it's unfortunate that they have a video replay mechanism for so many other things in this game, and yet when it comes to an obvious goal being scored, they can't seem to apply it in that situation. So, I mean, this is a situation where there'd have to be a massive outcry from other teams, other owners, to get them to refocus the replay rules. I don't know if there's an appetite for it. I think we could all agree that they got screwed out of a good goal. And to further your point, I mean, the tightly played nature of that game, the fact that the first goal mattered so much throughout these playoffs, it really could have changed the complexion of Game 6 if that thing had counted. And you know, there's no question that it should have counted.
And it was the best game. I mean, game six was the best game, really, of all of the games. You know, it was the most, it was the closest game. The rest of these things were haymaker after haymaker, the way it was going down. But, I mean, look, this, you know, the Matt Murray part of this story, 123 and a half minutes, something like that, you know, that he shuts the Predators out, that goal notwithstanding. I mean, that's just crazy to do, to, you know, just finish his rookie season and he's got two Stanley Cups. I mean, that's just nuts, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as all the Penguins mentioned after the Cup final, you also have to give credit to Marc-Andre Fleury for stepping in and playing as well as he did in the first two rounds. But Murray had his best game in the most important game of the playoffs for them. In game six, he was, I thought, the difference in that game. And it just goes to show you that, you know, as much as I like Fleury, and I think he's going to go someplace else and do well for somebody, could even be the Buffalo Sabres, there's a connection there with their new general manager. And mm-hmm. You know, the expectation is that, you know, Fleury is going to get sent to the Vegas team and then maybe sent somewhere else after that. But with all due respect to him, I have much more confidence in Matt Murray in that kind of spot than I do Marc-Andre Fleury. And the kid came through again, as you said. And behind, let's remember, a defense that was playing a ton of minutes with the absence of Chris Letang. And goaltending, I think, was the backbone of this Penguins championship along with Sidney Crosby.
The clutch gene is key, and I don't want to be ugly about Pekka Rinne because he's been so great for the Predators for so many years. I've had him in studio. He's just a great guy. But he sucked in three games in Pittsburgh. There was no other way to say it. While Matt Murray was standing on his head in Nashville, you know, that you could take any one of those games, could have completely changed this series, especially game one. Could have been a completely different animal when you add that to the fact that the Preds couldn't score on a 5-on-3, regardless of disallowed goals or whatever. You know, they didn't. You know, at the end of the day, they don't deserve to be the champion, and the team that won, that's got that Stanley Cup pedigree, you know, deserves it.
Yeah, and you know, this series was very reminiscent of the Vancouver Boston series on a number of fronts. One of them being that one of the goalies simply couldn't win on the road. In that case, it was Roberto Luongo. In this case, it was Pekka Rinne. But it was also a situation where, much like that series, I felt like like you mentioned before, the play on the ice wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't it was maybe a B-minus series as far as the actual hockey. But everything that surrounded the series, from the PK Subban versus Sidney Crosby stuff, to the atmosphere outside of Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, to the catfish, to everything else going on, what made this a really, really compelling and interesting series, even if the hockey wasn't of a high quality.
We've discussed the issues surrounding Dale Earnhardt Jr., and a lot of it, you know, we've kind of put on him at times. But, man, it just seems like week in and week out there's also mechanical issues. Now, he blamed the transmission. Did he drop that thing in a second from fourth, or from third to second, was it a transmission issue? Did they ever get to the bottom of that?
He said that he messed up and he was trying to go from third to fourth, and instead he actually went from third to second, which overrode the engine. He did it twice this weekend, and he took responsibility for it. It almost seems, and I don't want to like dive into, you know, his psyche or anything, but it almost seems like he's got this mental thing right now where everything is just kind of going wrong. Because we saw it a couple weeks ago. He thought he had a loose wheel because he had a bunch of loose wheel issues, and he ended up pitting, and there was nothing wrong there. And now he's kind of second-guessing himself when it comes to shifting and everything. He made two mistakes there. This is a team and a driver that the success hasn't been there, that they're struggling. Things keep happening to him, and you can tell this is kind of rattling a little bit. And that it's affecting their performance. They don't have confidence right now. I think that's the biggest thing.
He's Cole Trickle, man. I'm telling you, in Days of Thunder. I mean, he's blown a motor up himself and stuff like that. I mean, it's weird. Almost you mentioned a confidence issue, but I don't know, man. I used to say this about players in other sports. You know, I remember when Dominic Hasek announced that he was retiring at the end of the year. When you say you're retiring at the end of the year, you just retired, and it's tough to go. And I just wonder whether or not this dude's just trying to survive. I think he'd love to win Daytona, and I'm sure he would love to be in a chase, but I'm getting the feeling that this cat is just looking to survive and make sure he doesn't, like, die before the end of the year and get on with it.
You're not the first person that I've heard say that to me, that, you know, that in the close to Earnhardt, that, you know, he just feels like he's kind of got his mind on other things right now. He made his decision to retire, and And now perhaps he's kind of thinking of other things down the road and things he wants to do. And maybe the focus isn't 100% on racing and the enthusiasm to race isn't necessarily there. And now it's kind of bearing out a little bit on the track.
Yeah. Some weird stuff going on with other drivers. Darrell Wallace got a perfect racing name. But Darrell Wallace, you know, I don't even like the story, you know, first African-American since 2007. I mean, why is that a story anymore? You know, he's just, he's a driver. He's a good driver. He's going to get his chance. But he gets out there. But then he faints after the race, right? What was up with that? What do you mean he faints after the race? Like he actually fell right out and fainted or what?
Yeah, he was talking to reporters and he literally passed up pit road. And Darrell says that this has happened before and that one, you know, Pocono was really hot. It was a bit of a grind for the drivers. It was kind of it took a wear out of them. Two, he's never driven that far in a race before. Three, he says that, you know, he got so amped up and so excited and got so focused that he just kind of overworked himself to the point that he dehydrated and that's why he passed out of pit road. He was quickly revived and he was fine. He actually walked to victory lane to congratulate his good friend Blaney, but it's a little bit unusual circumstance, but he like I said, he says this has happened two or three other times. It is a little weird though.
All right, so there you have it. That is your Rapid Rewind for this, the 13th of June 2017. When we come back, we'll wrap it up right here on 730-1039. Yep.
No time to get on the phone? Tweet the big dog at Tom Abraham Show. Here's Tom Abraham.
Just sit right back and you'll hear it.
Time now for what to watch on TV tonight. Okay, all the good shows are over. We got stupid summer shows like World of Dance. What's 48 Hours NCIS? That looks interesting. I might have to check that out. You can check out the Drone Racing League on ESPN2 or the WNBA coming up at 9 o'clock. I'd rather watch the Drone Racing League. ESPN, they can't even come up with anything to put on. 30 for 30s. Why not put baseball on? They got a couple of, they got a new 30 for 30 tonight. This is the Celtics and Lakers Best of Enemies Part 1, Best Enemies Part 2. So I guess you can watch that thing. Of course, Braves baseball coming up here in just a little bit. Braves at Nationals. That's worth a look. We'll have it on our air right here, but you can also watch it on Fox Sports South. As well. It's tough, man.
Yeah, it's the dead period.
Got the Auburn spring game on the SEC Network. Hey. In case you missed it the first five times.
Jeez. Any chance that Florida Regional is still on rain delay?
Got Auburn summer football tour. An off-season look at the Tigers featuring segments from Auburn spring football. That's new. Wait a minute. Let me record that. The Auburn Summer Football Tour, followed by the Florida Summer Football Tour. Is Colt Kublik on the Auburn Summer Football Tour? You would think that would maybe. They would be there, maybe. You don't know. All right, tomorrow, short show tomorrow. We're going to bring you a golf segment with Matt Rudy from Golf Digest to preview the U.S. Open. And then we're gonzo for afternoon baseball. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, Cream did a great job with the research, I guess. T-Mac mixed the show. I'm Tom Abraham. We'll do it all over again tomorrow right here on 730-1039. Yep.